sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And who I am is Will Bluewater, and we're on the night of the air tonight with our trusty sidekick, a man who's very quickly coming into his own and getting, he's getting on radio programs, and he's a man of great wisdom and stature. Mark the Badger. Borcherting. And our guest tonight is Russ Jensen. He's a branch leader of Oklahoma Native American Church. And hello again, guys. Once again, we find ourselves Sunday evening with lots to talk about.
Yeah, hi Will. I'm Mark.
Yeah. We talked with Russ last February, and he just got back from retreat, and I'll bet he's got some stories to tell. And I know Mark's always got something interesting to tell. Mark's going to be talking with on Feet to Fire Radio later this evening, and he'll tell you about that. And so, yeah, guys, just take it away.
All right. Well, you want to take off? Want to lead off with something, Mark?
Bluewater was saying a little bit about the Feet to Fire show, and this is kind of, I got hit the last minute with it. James, who runs the show, a couple of days ago, we were looking at here. I think it was October 7th, 8th, and 9th, or 9th and 10th, or somewhere in there. We're getting hit pretty well by some pretty big auroras coming in. Some of them were moving fairly far south. Not real far, but, you know, down into the northern part of the United States, a little bit further than they normally do. And so he had posted a video of some, and we looked around and found several videos. And he had remembered something I talked about his show before about the auroras. So he asked me a day or so ago if maybe I might do a show at some time in the future. And I just got home about 15 minutes ago, and he said, would you do it tonight? So I wasn't planning on doing it, so I'm trying to figure out how to get things going and get enough stuff where I know what I'm talking about. But the auroras were a significant thing because of one of the Indian elders talked with years ago. She had made a sort of a prophecy, and she said that at a point in time in the future we would see green skies. of auroras, and they would be significant. I mean, they wouldn't be just your normal thing. The impression I got was that the auroras would be going pretty far south, maybe, you know, all the way to the equator. And so if something like that was to happen, it would be fairly significant. And she said that after this, there would be massive Earth changes. And so the green skies, several days of this, and maybe even visible during the day. She didn't say that specifically, but it's just kind of an impression I got that it would be pretty major. It would be not mistakable. And so if we ever see that, I personally will be getting ready.
Hey, Mark.
So, yeah.
I missed. Who was that that you were talking to about that?
It was an old Indian lady. I forget her name now.
Okay.
She was actually, she got a, the reason I placed some credence in what she said, she made several other statements. She said, you know, that we would be seeing all kinds of corporate crime, you know, like Enron and stuff like that. She said we would hit major deflation. She said the deflation would be so bad that it would bring down the entire banking system, and people would be trying to sell their houses just to get anything, and they wouldn't even be able to sell it.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it, and she also said that you would be seeing the United States getting all kinds of wars with little countries. You know, I mean, like Yemen, Iraq, Syria, you know. And so she, a lot of the stuff she mentioned has already happened. So she has a pretty good track record. And that's the, but it's also because her particular message also appears to me to correlate with what the message of Fatima, the three children of Fatima, which I think that message is also a very critical, important message. And in one of them, she also mentioned auroras. She said specifically, she said that one of her purposes of trying to get the papal consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary was essentially to stop World War II. And if that didn't happen, World War II was going to happen. And remember, this message was given to the children while World War I was in progress. And that, I think everything that I've seen on this tells me this whole thing's 100% legitimate. It's happened right on target, and everything about it, I think, has been true. The biggest warning sign to us is that the Vatican hid part of this information. And part of that is because part of it's about them. But last summer, an Italian journalist named Antonio Sossi, he released what he said was part of Sister Lucia's diary that was written in the year January 1944. Well, I was pretty interested in that when I saw it, because in it, she literally says something touches the axis of the earth, the land, the seas, and the sky leave their bounds, and people are getting drug into sinkholes in the ground, the whirlpools of water, you name it, and millions, by the millions. And she said, literally, it's the purification of the world. Well, this is the exact terminology that the Hopi elders use, purification day. And if you look at it, a magnetic field reversal of the planet would trigger the thing she's talking about. It would trigger crustal displacement, ocean displacement, and it would also trigger our atmosphere being severely reduced. In other words, literally the sky falling. Not just bitumen, but our entire atmosphere collapsing. You could be in a situation where, we could be in a situation where we may not even have an atmosphere. So it gets pretty serious. And it's tied to a magnetic field reversal, which if that was to happen, and we know our magnetic fields are declining, then our planet is more vulnerable to both sun solar flares, CMEs, and coronal holes. And if our magnetic field was to go down completely, we would be vulnerable to even normal sunlight. It doesn't have to be a solar flare. Even a normal day would be a problem. Because if you don't have a magnetic field, and that's what we've been seeing lately with some of these auroras, it hasn't been massive solar flares. It appears to be that some of this energy is coming into weak spots in the magnetic field of the Earth or the magnetosphere. It's tipping and there's holes or something where it's weaker than other places, and some of that energy appears to be pouring through there. So we may be getting indications that we already have some problems.
Yep. And if there's all the sinkholes out through the south and the Gulf of Mexico
area,
Louisiana, and all that happening. And there's a lot of statistical data out now about the mix of gases in the atmosphere is changing dramatically and correlated to the reduction in the phytoplankton populations out in the ocean, which is then tied to nuclear testing, radioactivity, a lot of those different things. So, combination of all those things that's already starting to happen for sure.
And then we have the other problem. One of the problems this Indian lady spoke about, too, was very interesting at the time. She made a big deal about certain locations in the United States being, far away from nuclear reactors. And she was saying this back around 1981. And she made a big deal about it. And at the time, I didn't really understand that very much. Now I understand it much better because if you had a massive crustal displacement, your nuclear reactors would be a problem. If it happens fast enough, you don't have enough time to shut them down.
Right.
And
Fukushima's that exact perfect example of
not
that.
Not only that, but we're learning that half or more of the nuclear reactors in the United States are sitting on fault zones.
Yep.
It's bad enough just having it on normal ground, but it's sitting on a weak spot.
That kind of has to make you question about the agenda of those been in charge. They know those things on fault lines. Maybe they've been trying to push this whole agenda to make a lot of these things happen. I don't know.
You're thinking
very strange.
Exactly what I thought. Maybe not an accident, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
You also have the seed vaults that have been built, and the first one we heard about was up on an island north of Norway and Sweden.
All right.
And, the first thing you hear is this is on an island built into a side of a mountain, basically, and you say, okay, well, they had to bring in all the equipment. It was a very difficult construction project just to build the damn thing. So why would you build it there? If you were just going to build a seed vault, why couldn't you build it somewhere else that's a lot easier, right? And cost less. Well, so you start to say, why? Why in that particular location? First, it's built into the side of a mountain. Okay, so that probably gives you some protection against incoming radiation. If your magnetic fields collapse, you'll have radiation coming out the wazoo.
Right.
And so it would be, you could probably embed it into a mountain to protect from radiation. The other thing is the location north like that. Most people feel if there was a massive crustal displacement and the ocean started moving, they would probably move from the equator northward or southward in that direction. That's what people seem to think. So if that was to happen, the further away from the equator you are, probably the better off you're going to be. Well, that's where that island is. It's pretty far north.
Right.
So they also might know something about the geologic structure there to where it's, less likely to have a problem. So I suspect those are some of the reasons they may have built that in that particular location. Anyway.
What are they using it for, Have you got any information on what's there?
Storing seeds. Well, see, the problem is when you have a magnetic field reversal in the past, you get blasted with radiation, including your DNA, and everything changes. So they're probably wanting to keep those seeds from mutating.
Right.
Keep them stable.
Well, I would suspect they probably have a few other things there, too.
Well, they, I think they have, it's like a seed arc. I mean, it's literally all the different kinds of seeds on planet Earth.
Right. Well, do you think that that has those concerns about those things that prompted some of the movement in the GMO field, trying to create crops that are more resistant to higher levels of radiation and, you know, all these things you're talking about?
Well, that could be true as well. There's a possibility of that, but I don't, you know, we don't know that. There's an equal possibility. That's just to get rid of everybody.
True.
Well, we know
yeah.
when, what happens when animals eat these GMOs. We're hearing lab reports and stuff of the crazy stuff,
right.
tumors and stuff that it causes.
Right.
Yep. So I would tend to think that that probably is a higher priority on their agenda than trying to do something that helps us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's my guess, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that could be. That very well could be. So, yeah, what the...
Now, the,
who's,
now the other
who is
one...
the they that you talk about, though? That's the question. Who is
we
they?
We don't know. I mean, just whoever makes these decisions. I mean, who is promoting GMOs? What companies and the people behind that? You know, who are the individuals and companies, and what's their motive for it? What's the motive? And there's multiple layers of this possibly. It's just like the whole thing with the climate change story, okay? On one side, they can use it to have carbon tax and try to prop up the banking system with that, which even IMF is talking about that right now. On the other hand, they can use it to tell people, oh, some of the people in the know, they could say, well, we're doing, you know, chemtrails and geoengineering to try to save the planet, but you can't tell anybody else, you know.
Right.
you know, they could be doing something like that, and that could be legitimate. I mean, it is possible if you look at one of the components in some of the things they're spraying is supposedly aluminum. Aluminum happens to be a good torsion reflector. So if Earth and our planet and the torsion characteristics of left and right torsion spin are changing, then aluminum might help with that. So there
right.
is some scientific basis of that. So in that case, they may not be doing that for a bad reason.
Right.
You know, it may be for, now it may turn out that it's not too good for us, but
yeah.
they,
well, that's
you know,
true.
Maybe they don't have
yeah.
a choice.
Yeah, some of those other things to bear in mind. Those things are in there. And then you can kind of
yeah.
start combining that with some of their frequency technology that they have. And it becomes a perfect, well, basically turning everybody into more of a transmitter receiver than you already are by utilizing some of that other technology. But yeah, so that's all very fascinating. Do you, I guess my question for you, Mark, is to talk about these individuals that have had. Well, maybe prophetic statements and a lot of these things happening. Do you think that there's any way to, by changing the behavior or actions of people, that the future it can be changed? Or is it set in stone already, like a movie script that's already been written and we're just playing it out in a massive cosmic theater? What do you think?
Well, no, I think that we do. You know, I think we do, and I think we're approaching the point, though, that our ability, you know, is like a couple of things the Hopis said. They said you will be seeing people in the future. They're eating, dancing, walking around, talking and stuff, but they are dead. So the problem that we have is we have an increasing number of our population that are spiritually dead. They're not going to change anything, much less, including themselves. More like them. So that we have that problem. Now the Hopi also said that you know, people would just become mindless. Well, if our magnetic fields go, yes, even well-intentioned people can lose it because our brains probably are affected by a magnetic field collapse, and so it becomes very difficult. And you could, your best chance in that situation, if that was to happen, would probably be go into some kind of a state, a meditative state, where you could maintain your own integrity better. And so, yeah, so these things that people have told us, you know, in different cultures for thousands of years maybe, said go somewhere, be calm, peaceful, sit somewhere and just wait it out and do prayer, meditation and all that. that probably is about the best thing that you could do, you know, to write it out if that was to occur. Now, the Hopi also say, if you look at the last world cycle, what they said was, you know, right before the crap hit the fan, they said some of the people were given warnings or messages, you know, through spirit, and told they need to do this or that or that. In one of the stories, they were told they had to move, and some of the other people didn't listen and said, well, I'm not leaving. I got my home and my stuff here, so I'm going to stay here. You can go do what you want. You're an idiot, you know,
right.
And listen to some spirit message, you know. So the people left, and they were told to do this and this and follow this cloud during the day and a star at night. And when it stopped, they were to stop. And so they don't say how many days they traveled, but they did say when they stopped, there were other groups traveling from other directions. And when the last group of people got there, it's like this spirit being appears. I forget his name. And he tells them, he does something that gives them some form of protection. In some stories, it's when they go underground with the ant people. He opens up the area and they go underground with the ant people. And they say literally when this happens, when they're underground or when they're given this protection, that the face of the earth is recreated. I mean, all hell breaks loose. And it has to cool down. In some of the stories, they actually say it's hot. It takes a while before the earth cools down to where they can go back up. And then they say when they do get up, they say that this spirit being reappears and says, you are now in the next world. And there are only two things you need to know. Number one, you are to follow the laws of the Creator. Number two, you are to sing praises and thanks to the Creator every day. And if we don't hear you singing those praises, we know you return to evil, and we're going to come back and do this all over again. So the answer to the solution of what we need to do is those original messages. Those two things is what we need to be doing. Follow the law of the Creator and sing praises. That's the first things we should be doing to fix our problem. After that, we can be trying to help each other out.
Well, did you know that there is a constitutional fundamental law that commands you and everybody else here, at least here in this country, well, everybody's on the planet, to do that very thing? You're obliged to endeavor to understand your Creator, know His laws and live by them. That's constitutional law here in the United States of America. People don't understand that because they don't know how to read and comprehend. That's the biggest problem we have, especially in the Native American church. These guys doing all these things, causing all these problems. So they would just take the time to read, try to comprehend a couple of things, the actions that these criminals claiming authority of government coming around doing, they have no authority. None.
Yep. That's right.
So, it's all there. Like I said, it's constitutionally, it's constitutional fundamental law. You're commanded to endeavor to know and worship your Creator.
Yep.
And that ties in with all those very things. And I think, actually, that the purpose of the Native American Church, not to get off track of where you're at, but I think it kind of leads to that, is one of these groups that should be the vanguard, should be the leading edge in getting back in control of our governance and our society so that we even have the ability to maybe get some answers and change some of these outcomes, possibly, because I'm hopeful that if we were to make some massive changes in personal behaviors and the way that we interact with one another, that we'd be able to maybe circumvent some of these future things. But perhaps maybe not. I don't know. Maybe that just has to happen, this cleansing by fire and all that stuff for evolution of the spirit and man. But I think that we have to at least make the attempt at that, and all the tools have been put in place by our forefathers and the ancestors and coming up, through putting all these different things in place and the Thera, and the law of nations. But the problem is we can't get anybody, I have a hard time getting people to understand that they need to read these simple documents at all. Because everything in your Constitution, pretty much after Article 1 or the original ratified version before your Bill of Rights, that is your Constitution for the United States of America. And after, when they added those Bill of Rights, that's your Constitution for the United States. And those are not the same place at all. That's
but
why I have problems
most people
start talking religion. So
most people don't understand what's even in there, so like you do. And they're not really, most of the people aren't really interested in going in and making an effort to learn it.
Yeah,
well, a lot of them can't even read.
Yeah, true. Well, you're right. That's true. You know, and I think, that's obviously, we all talked about the public fool system. I think that's what you called it one time, Will. It's an intentional, purposeful action to dumb down the populace so they don't know how to read, which puts everybody at a huge disadvantage. Anyway, I didn't mean to jump off track like that because that's pretty interesting what you're talking about. But I think it all does tie together. And the question becomes is if there's anything that we can do about it, what would that be, I guess, to change
the
outcome
or make it
better so we can survive?
Well, we can do something about it. The things we have to do is stay on target, and we have to do, we're in probably pretty much the same position as those people in the third world. When they were facing what we're facing now, I would guess we're in the same position as most of the people are not listening. And we're in the position that the most important thing we have to do now is listen to spirit and listen to what we're told to do. When it says jump, we jump. And we follow laws, creator, we give praise to the creator like we're supposed to be doing, do those two things first, then pay attention. And when spirit gives you a message, you listen and do what you're told to do. If you're pretty sure you use your own discernment and you know that this is a correct, true message, then you would do that. Because I think it's going to get to the point where you're going to have to do that. That's what happened to them last time, and I think that's probably what's going to happen again. I don't see right now it changing to where we're going to be able to get most of the people back on course. I think we're past that point. I don't see it could happen, but, it's a pretty big divine intervention and miracle because it requires the people themselves to change on a large scale. I don't know that that's going to happen or not. So I think that the people that are paying attention right now and the people who are listening, maybe many of the people in the Native American church and also the people listening to the show, they're probably the type of people that are paying attention a little bit better, and when they get some spiritual messages, all they need to do is listen and follow it. And that's probably where we're at right now.
So, in your opinion, what kind of a time frame are we? From what I'm gathering from what you're saying, is things have already, these events have pretty much started, or early precursor stages of those. So, we got a year, 10 years. 100?
Well, I would suspect that we could very well see this decline in this current Catan cycle, which started in 2012 and will go to 2032. So I would suspect that anywhere in that time frame we can see things happen or a steady change and decline and things in our weather getting just worse and our magnetic fields dropping more and just more and more. And people, one of the things the Hopi talked about was just more and more where people watch the behavior of people. That will decline. People will just, more and more people will just start losing it,
right?
Likely. So you just watch what's going on around you and just pay attention to it, and that will give you indicators. Watch what happens with the trees. Watch what happens with the animals, how they're behaving. Increasing, like you mentioned, the sinkholes. If those keep increasing, if things like they're talking about the El Nino being really bad, they're talking about this huge cold blob of something up in the Arctic water, things like that, just more and more stuff like that that you hear about, I just watch for things like that. And, keeping yourself, just in a good mental state, I suspect people that tend to remain calm and peaceful, do prayers and do ceremonies and do things to help one another out, I think just that way of thinking will give you a certain level of protection.
Right.
So, yeah. That's why we've been trained, all those things across all the different spiritual teachings over the last thousands of years, they all have the same core teaching. My suspicion is all of those things help you to get through these times. That's what they're there for.
Right.
We just have to pick them up and use them. But then also, shows like this and other shows where people are communicating and sharing information and saying what they're seeing, what they're witnessing and noticing going on in their environment, that can help too for people just to have good communication.
Good. So you think it's possible for the general populace or certain fractions of it to get organized enough that they can actually have an impact, or
I think some will. I don't know how many. I think the thing is, we do know that once you reach a certain mode of thinking and working, that the people that kind of got their act together can use that ability to help the others. This comes in with the holographic principle of quantum theory. So if you combine that with the concept that, small numbers of people, small percentages of people can actually change things. If you combine these two ideas together, then you have the idea that each group of people that gets their act together can communicate, not just through books and shows like this and stuff. They can communicate on the spiritual plane holographically to the rest of the people, which is faster. You don't have to spend a lot of time teaching them. You can get to it a little bit. That's one of the ideas that's come to me here in the last few years, is do that. So one of the things people can do here, they're listening to the show, yourself and other people, is when they're doing prayer and stuff, one of the ways I was trained on it by Spirit was, before you start a prayer and you think about these things and how to help other people and get them to join in, is a way to make a connection. And the way I was told how to do it was you visualize all the other people on the planet, 6 point whatever, 8 billion or whatever it is. And inside of each one, you visualize inside of each one of those people is a little speck of light, like a little star. And that is you within them. So you do that first. Then you turn around and look inside of yourself, and you see billions of little stars. That is all the other people within you.
Right.
Once you've done this, you've established a connection. Now you drop into your prayer or whatever it is, visualization, whatever it is, meditation, whatever it is you're doing, and now you can connect. You're connected with all those people. And then you can share your message, whatever it is you feel that you can tell them or communicate with them through that medium that will help them to understand and get themselves on track. And so that might be something that people can try too.
Right.
Something like that.
So what are your thoughts, or what do you, know about, or a lot of talk lately over the past few years about this shift from 3D dimension through fourth dimension, the fifth dimension, and the stage shifting of certain individuals and people, based on kind of what you're talking about right there, but a mindset, a state of being that not necessarily go through all the physical changes of the planet, but they're able to shift out of that just enough so that they're not impacted by that. So they're I guess, parallel, not really parallel worlds, but maybe that's the way they're
phrasing
it.
Well, I think that's a possibility, but see, the thing is what they're doing by doing that is focusing on how do I get out of the physical way. And the question becomes is, that's just a way of getting away. It doesn't I don't see a lot of things in some of those messages that sometimes they do and sometimes they don't that talks about the person changing themselves.
Right.
Who cares about changing dimensions and stuff if you're still the same? If I go over to fifth dimension and I'm the same and I haven't changed and I have things that I'm doing that's not proper, it doesn't matter what dimension I'm in.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I was kind of talking about. It's the thing that I've been seeing a little bit on was that was the thing of them changing themselves
right.
through these spiritual activities, meditation, all this, these global meditative sessions they've been having, and they're trying to, you know, change their internal frequencies to, you know, to do that, change themselves enough that they will phase shift or whatever you want to call it. But
well, what will happen?
Yeah, you're right.
If you have enough people doing that,
right.
If you have enough people doing that, and that's influencing other people and helping them to change, you reach a point where everybody unifies in consciousness.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what dimension they're in, because when
right.
they do that, they can do whatever they want.
Right.
And they can
yeah.
change anything.
So I guess that goes back to my other, earlier question about whether or not this whole future coming at us is changeable or not. So do you believe that that is possible through enough
well, yeah.
interconnected
yeah,
consciousness?
If people unified in all... wanted to make that change and they wanted to do it and they did it, they would literally be connecting into Creator and anything is possible. The question is, do they want to do that or not? Do they have the desire within them to even do it?
Right.
That's where I see the problem is. Not that they can't do it, but they don't even want to do it.
Right.
If they want to do it and they have the desire to do it, yes, they could do it.
But
see, that gets back. What did the Hopi say? They're eating, dancing, drinking, but they're dead. In other words, they don't
yeah.
have that desire.
That's true. But don't you think that some of that has been conditioned out of people from the social engineering and everything, especially here in Western society?
Yeah.
The whole programming process from
yeah.
the minute of birth on to, you know, not to just, I don't think really people have full free agency like they believe that they do, just because of the way
right.
the mind works and, you know, all the programming goes on around 24/7. So
yeah, that's exactly right. They've been trained and conditioned to rely on systems that are unreliable. They've been trained to rely and trust things that are not reliable, and things that are not powered by their relationship to Creator. They've been trained to rely on certain technology. Not that all I'm not against technology, but if it makes your connection with Creator weaker, it's not good.
Right.
And you,
yeah.
And I believe any of the technology can be used for good or bad, but
right.
when you have people walking around addicted to an iPod or iPhone, and they don't even really care what they're doing with it. They're just plugged into it, walking around. They're already an iPhone zombie. Well, there's a problem. So the big thing what this is all doing, really, what you're saying, what it's really doing is it's teaching them to break their connection with Creator and not use it. And
right.
whenever you do that, you're going to be in trouble and make bad decisions, bad choices, and you don't even see it coming. So
right.
the best advice right now for people is very simple. Learn how to establish connection with Creator. Learn how to talk, learn how to trust, get the communication working, because you're going to need it.
Right.
And
yeah.
your Native American church and stuff, that's one of the things that some of those sacramentals and stuff can help people to do, is to reestablish that connection with Creator. That's why it's under attack.
That's true. That has been for a long time. Yeah,
I
agree with everything you're saying there. But it seems to me, obviously, at this point in our conversation, that in order to affect all these types of changes, we need a fairly large group around the entire planet. But in order to get there, we have to find some core group that can go in or start coming together and, like I say, take back control of the governance mechanisms on the planet, because it's the same everywhere.
Well,
every
remember, though,
on this planet goes, understand,
the
they
process
all
you're
the
talking
law,
about,
so.
Though, Russ, the process what you just mentioned is something that takes a long time, and we may not have that much time.
That's true.
The process I'm talking about is we're going to have to up this a notch and not work on our normal level. What
right.
I'm saying is we might want to consider, and the message I've been getting from Spirit is we have to go to a different level. Don't try to communicate on strict physical material things like governing laws and all that. We may not have time. What we do is you take it up a level into the level where we are all connected. We are all
right.
already united, and we operate at that level.
Okay. No, I'm with
so
you.
So your small
that,
group of
kind
people.
Of, that's
your
kind
small
of the
group
same
of people.
Thing that. Yeah. Right. Well, it's kind of the same thing. But that small group of people has got to be able to do that in a protected environment, and they've got to be able to defend themselves, because you're right, it's all under attack. And so I guess the message that I've been, sort of receiving for the past couple of months is to,
uh-huh.
to work on those kinds of things of helping create that environment so that people can meet in those sacred spaces, even if it's individually, and be able to utilize maybe some of these certain substances to help alter the consciousness, so you help you shift into that better awareness or better connectivity. Not everybody has to do that, but even the, a lot of those the thought crimes, they're going to start into legislation about certain things people can't not supposed to be thinking. But to do that, so I think we have to find a small group of people that are going to be standing out there as the vanguard at the gate. You know, the barbarians at the gate, we have to to do that. And that's where I think some of these other ideas about constitutional law, proper law application, how we can create these safe zones, I guess, for individuals that can then, those small groups, begin to do that and begin to reach out. Because if you're spending all of your time tied up in legal battles or being in jail, it's hard for you to be able to be able to be connecting out to Creator and every little source and all those things around not the planet, but throughout the rest of the cosmos. So that, I think, is very important, and that's what I think the purpose of the Native American Church, specifically Akaba, Native American Church,
right.
is supposed to be at. But what I see
mm-hmm.
now is that we just need to be able to come together a little more cohesive unit with some, we've got quite a bit of law that we've been doing here in the state of Utah on a lot of these issues. We're going to start bringing some of those things forward, but getting a group of people that are not afraid to stand up and speak, and kind of take the battle back to the enemy, as it were, using their own law, pretty much.
Yeah.
So that then there can be a group of people like you and Will, and a lot of these people that are very spiritually in tune, can start doing those things, be going your shamanistic journeys and travel and doing all those things that everybody talks about, the medicine man and that meeting earlier this year down in Sedona with spiritual leaders from all the indigenous tribes from around the planet, to start having the ability to be able to do those things and do it not in secret, but to do it as a way of being and a way of saving this planet. I don't know so much about saving humanity, but I'm more concerned about saving the rest of the species that are here. the few that we haven't already put to the point of extinction. The birds and the dolphins and the whales, those cute little panda bears that everybody loves to have pictures of. Pretty soon, that's all you have is pictures. Don't do something. So, anyways, so that's very interesting. But I think we tie all those things together. I think it's important that I find a few people that are willing to get the, roll up their sleeves and get in there and start get in the ring and start duking it out from a legal standpoint so we can protect our brothers and sisters like you. So you can do your job, whatever that might be. Because I think that you're going to also see if some of these earth changes start happening. You're already seeing a whole police state's been put in place. But I don't think that's just to control populations. I think that's to control populations because of the huge changes. And
yes.
Like I said, the limit of resources, access to resources, a whole way of life happening. They have to be able to control that so it's not sheer pandemonium.
Yeah.
But I like to believe that there's a way that we can circumvent that whole, the apocalyptic end that everybody seems to think is inevitable.
Well,
so
it's, we tend to think that way, but again, we don't know at this point what is necessarily best. It might be that for us to go through a purification and all that might be the best thing for us. We don't want that to happen. We want to avoid that, and I'm not against that either. And I think that if enough people got together and they were working in unity with each other and Creator, yes, they could do anything. And if they did that, yes, I think it would be a good thing, because I think that's our ultimate goal. So if we did that and we were able to avert a catastrophe worldwide, that would be good. That would be probably better than a purification. You know, because that's ultimately what I believe our purpose is. Our purpose is to do that sometime. We're just not doing it.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I just don't know if it's going to happen or not. It's nice to, but I do know if it does happen, the way it's going to happen is it's going to be through us operating at a spiritual level first in a unity, unified with each other in the realization that at that level with Creator. If we do that, even a small group can then have an enormous effect upon the rest of the people to help them get to that point too. And so we have to be smart. We have to learn, we have to learn how to fight this battle better than our enemy. And we're not that smart. We're still fighting a lot of times on just strictly a physical level. Many times we don't understand how to take our science and our spirituality and all these things and combine them together and up it a notch and use these things themselves. What does it mean when we say, Mayans say, Inlakesh, I am another you? What does it mean, Om Atakiyasin, Namaste? What do those words mean? They have a lot of meaning. Those words alone, if we understand what they mean, they tell us how to work at this problem. We unify in consciousness, and when we do that and create that unity, it makes it easier for us to communicate and talk with the other people. Things like Mad Bear Anderson traveling without a suitcase. Well, guess what? Everybody can do that.
Right.
We just have to learn.
Yeah.
And if we do that, I think that's where you're wanting to go too, with this idea of how do we deal with this and how do we change ourselves, and then how do we avert some of these problems and let them happen into us.
You're exactly right, because there are groups, there are a lot of individuals and people wanting to do these kinds of things and get involved with things like Native American Church, or involved in a lot of these different things, and go on these journeys down to South America and participate in ayahuasca ceremonies, and a lot of these plant-based substances to better understand themselves and the Creator and where they're at. But they all pretty much come under immediate attack after a short period of time. Native American churches, even people that aren't doing anything with sacramental substances at all, but just because of their interaction with the local communities and bringing that sense of harmony and teaching mainly the youth the better ways to interact, well, law enforcement has a problem with that, because if crime in the area goes down, they don't get a budget raise next year. They can't buy more toys. And that really is what happens a lot of time.
Do you remember, and there's a classic scene in the movie The Matrix which covers this. Did you ever see the movie The Matrix? Scene in the movie where Morpheus, the guy that believed in Neo, Morpheus, they're out on a street walking amongst people, and those people can't see him or anything, and Morpheus tells Neo, said, Neo, most of these people are hopelessly, this isn't an exact quote, but they're so connected or addicted to the system that they will fight you, even though, because they don't realize it's not good for them. And what you're talking about is the same thing. A lot of these people are so connected and addicted to the system, they can't see anything else. They're stuck.
Right.
And then the question becomes, how do you get them unstuck?
I don't know. I don't know if we can get everybody unstuck. I think that my purpose more at this point, bringing a message, I might have to be bringing forward, I guess, spirit, creator, whatever you want to call it, is about this, of finding a few other people. I have a few people working with me now on some of these legal issues, but then to be able to provide a shield for these groups so that they don't individually have to worry about dealing with all these legal and lawful issues that most of them don't understand either. So that they can do those kinds of things and be protected. And I guess that's really what I've been searching for, is other people of like mind that are not afraid to take a bullet for the rest of the group, take one for the team kind of a thing, but come in and help these groups. Mr. Mooney's done a fantastic job on things that he's been involved in. He's put a little legal team too out in California and doing some things, but even there, they're not really operating and bringing a full force of everything that could be being utilized to help protect these groups. So like I said, they can then begin to have an impact on society and be protected in doing it. We have to have that. It's, like I said, we have to be able to take it to the enemy just like they are taking it to us. And so I guess that's my message for anybody that's listening. Hey, if you guys want to help out and get better educated and informed about what the real law is that operates, that this entire planet right now operates on, it's not what you guys think. It's not even close to that, but it's all right there. It's easy to read with people. I think you said, I think it's important that we find the different groups of both people and everybody bring on their talents or I'm not really sure what their purpose is. But we have to be able to protect our group of individuals. And you're right, not doing it on a physical standpoint, but even law is mental. It's semi-spiritual because it's thoughts. Thought forms and thought ideas and ways of utilizing information, which isn't tangible, to be able to affect outcomes. And mainly, like I said, just to be able to give people an opportunity they can begin to express these things and get themselves involved in these different activities and start connecting from a spiritual standpoint, which is very difficult to do if you're operating in an environment of fear, which is where we're at right now.
Yeah.
And secrecy, and we shouldn't have to be doing that as much, especially if it's these plant-based substances, which, these plants were here long before your United States government ever thought about being created. So the dichotomy of things is just, it creates tension, which creates fear, which, there's no peace in the land, and I think that's what we have to try to get back to. So I think that's what you're talking about, peaceful and
peaceful. Right.
Distance. So, but we're right in the middle of a war, I guess, of some sort, information war, or war for your mind. I don't know, find things out there. But,
it's on a lot of levels, and so we, including the physical level, mental, emotional, spiritual, all these things, it's at each level that we're fighting at. And certain, if we're aware of that, and like you said, if you're in fear, if we're in a mode where we're thinking more of our unification with everybody, how we're all connected,
right?
Our enemy usually does the opposite. What it does to us is it tries to break our connections, so get us to fight with each other. And
right.
We waste a lot of time, the police fight with us, or this fight, or we're running around like our chickens with our head cut off, fighting each other over stuff that isn't really necessarily important, that we feel is important. And
right.
The moment
yeah.
we realize that we're being duped, and
yeah.
we get together, and we decide, hey, we're just not going to play this game, then that's when the game stops.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, you're right, because I think that's behind the homogenization of populations around the entire globe. That's been the big push the last 50 years of going in, especially these smaller countries like you were talking about earlier, and going in and destroying the tribal culture. That's what they did here on the North American continent. Came across and pretty much decimated that tribal environment. I don't think it was so much because they were you know, Redskins and Indians, it was because they, you know, that was part of the plan. They got to homogenize everybody because, you know, the tribal units, just like the family unit, much more difficult to control a family unit that has a strong, you know, leadership of a parent, mother and father, than it does with the single parent homes and all the things that go on there. So that's the other thing too. We have to get back to that of understanding what's happening.
What you're telling me right now reminds me of one of the things one of the Hopi elders talked to me about. He showed me one of the codexes, and it showed different world cycles. And in the first three worlds, you had these little things that underneath people's butts. And in the fourth world, our world cycle, it was missing. And he points to that under their butt, and he says, look, no roots. No roots, no connection,
right.
No tradition. And that's what you're talking about here. If you don't have roots, if you're not rooted in a firm tradition, ancestors, and a culture, and Native Americans, any group on earth that had traditional values, morals, good morals, principles, any of them, if you look over the last how many years, they've all been under attack to undermine that connection. Yeah.
So how many world cycles are there then?
Well, different
people
have different beliefs. The Hopi believe we're in the fourth world right now, getting ready to move to the fifth world.
Well, Thomas O'Males was taught, Thomas, I haven't interviewed him in several years, but he grew up, his mother was invited to run the cultural center at Hopi. And if you go back and listen to Thomas O'Males, wait a minute. Is that his? No, that's not his right name. Gee whiz, I forgot his name. You remember who I'm talking about, Mark, the fellow that grew up in Hopi and the elders took him out?
Yeah, he's the one that wrote the... Yeah, and his...
Well, that's
he
not...
Was,
that's,
well,
not the
yeah,
Hopi
Survival. Yeah, I think you're right, Thomas...
Mills.
Thomas O'Mill.
Yeah. And Mills grew up... they take him out
the
on the roof. They teach him
center.
Things, right? And they taught him that the Giza Plateau with its eight pyramids represented, you know, how many chances we've got to balance the world, or that would be the end of it, and we're going in from four to five now.
His work is partially Hopi elder stuff, but part of it's part of his own concepts and ideas, and I'm not sure all of it was 100% supported by him, but I think he has a lot of good ideas in his work. I keep in contact with him from time to time. But,
yeah, he wrote that book
yeah.
called The Truth, yeah. Interesting, very, very
yeah.
interesting.
He wrote another one called, I think, When East Meets West or something, and after I talked to him, he updated that book, and he sent me an updated copy, and it probably tripled in size. It was real thin before. It's the second book that he did. And he just updated it a year and a half ago.
Really? We need to get him back on.
I talked to him about that. I don't know. I'm not sure what his interest level was. He seemed to be sort of interested, but I don't know. So we'll have to work on him and see if we can get him on. Yeah, I agree. It would be good to have him talk. Because his basic whole, you know, when you nail it down in a nutshell, his whole idea is very simple. We need to have balance. And that idea I've seen in other places too. So in a nutshell, you know, so what creates a balance? You know, balance is when you have an equal flow of information, energy, whatever it is. It's flowing, it's moving, and it's balanced. It's equal exchange. So whatever is given, it's equally given back. And you create a balance in your system. And if you look at our system and our banking system and our economy and stuff, it's not based upon balance. It's based upon some guys getting as much as they can out of squeezing the rest of us for whatever they can get.
Right.
And that's causing, that intention alone is causing most of our problems. Most of our side effects of all the things we're facing is triggered by that kind of attitude. And it's also an attitude that the Hopi, I remember they said, we cannot fight this battle by forcing our beliefs or will upon another person, because that's the cause of the problem. They said the only weapon that we have to fight with is the power or the energy of truth itself. That's one
right.
of the things they said. So we, even if we're on the right, even if we're saying the right thing, we can't force it upon another person. We can only try to convince them with the truth.
Yeah,
so,
that's true. And I guess the truth is sort of subjective, too. A lot of it's subjective. It doesn't care whether you believe it or not. But there are things, truths, that is a little bit subjective. I'll go back to this whole thing of the Law of Nations. It's book 1, section 128, talking about the rights of individuals. And we're talking about worship and religion. You know, it states right there, this is constitutional law right here. Belief is not to be commanded. And what kind of worship must be that which is produced by force? Okay? So, you know, even, as I said, the founders of this country were very connected to a creator, I believe, just by looking at the things that they put into place, they put in action for us. That was one of the reasons why Madison didn't want to have a Bill of Rights put in. They didn't think it was necessary. It's all contained right there in that book, Law of Nations, which is the only bit of constitutional law that applies to you as a person, as a living member of society. The rest of it doesn't. It applies to government. It's fundamental law. It defines how governments are supposed to operate in their limits. It doesn't apply to you as a person, except for in that book where it speaks to you specifically, tells you what you can and can't do to them, what they can and can't do, and the limits that are their authority, and that is where we have to start looking at if we're going to be having a group that's helping us to protect and create an environment for everybody else to operate in, of pushing back on these guys using constitutional law. It's just right there. And it all dovetails very nicely with all the things that the whole being, all your prophecies and everything you're talking about of how to be in harmony, I guess, because your constitutional law, if everybody read it and understood it, speaks about those very things of balance and harmony and allowing individuals to come here and have an experience.
Come from Creator, right?
Yeah. So in those words there.
So every right that you have is a God-given, Creator-given right, and that's all there is to it. Anybody else that tries to step in and circumvent that, they're just trying to get in the way and take control of your rights.
Well, that is true. And I don't even know if it's right so much. It's a state of being is what it is. See, in that moment, you have that state of being. You're whatever. Because as far as I can tell, I'm just a little bit of conscious awareness just showed up in this place one day. And I don't know where this place is at, neither does anybody else. Really don't. It's round rocks, vacuum of space, all that stuff. It's impossible to really get your mind around. But having some kind of an experience, a physical experience, and interacting, and that's the purpose of here. And really, the only thing you should be doing is things that are damaging to other individuals, real damages, not all those victimless crimes against the state because I had a plant in my pocket. I mean, come on, that's retarded. But hey, that's where we're at. So,
Creator didn't make that plant that set a and put a sign on it that says it's illegal to use.
No.
It's that simple.
In fact, the human body.
If you weren't supposed to use it, what would happen is you would eat it and then you would die.
Right.
That's
your message
from Creator that says don't eat this.
It's true.
Well, the only comment that has been made of. Is you're supposed to use these herbs with judgment and skill.
True. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because they're not for everybody either. That's true.
That's right.
Have to have that freedom of choice to be able to. And being denied that, I think that's the biggest crime that I see with modern government, is they're denying people an opportunity to have that type of an experience, an expression of that kind of experience, because my understanding is that although Creator created us, but also we're connected to Creator, and so the things that we're experiencing, Creator's experiencing also in some way. I'm not exactly sure how that happens, but there's purpose for all those things. So
these plants, we have people using these plants for other things other than just necessarily a spiritual connection. There's people using the the marijuana plant and stuff to heal physical problems and diseases.
Oh, sure.
Now,
yeah.
We know that these plants can heal, you know, on a physical level. They can also help a person to heal on the other levels.
That's very, yeah, that is very
true. The mental, the emotional, the spiritual, they can also benefit you on those levels as well. They can help you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suspect these guys might be well aware of some of those things too.
Yeah,
well,
a lot of our
they are.
A lot of our veterans are getting help. You know, that you know, PTSD is a big problem, so is suicide. And, you know, they're being blocked from it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Carillion photography, but the photography of energy fields and things like that. And,
yeah.
In fact, the most living organisms on this planet have CB receptors or something similar to it, but mainly it's the human body is full of them. And what they found is that with those receptor sites are properly kept open, and by the use of cannabis and CBD there, that the energy flows between parts of the body increase considerably. And so that's where a lot of your healing modalities come from, these medicinal products that they're producing from the cannabis plants and hemp. And, you know, I mean, hemp, gosh, that's the most useful plant on the planet. You can produce almost everything in your modern society out of hemp oils. Same thing you do for petroleum oil. And so I think that's profit motive and the money system that I think you expected about earlier. A few guys squeezing everything they can out of everybody else. And those things take away from their profit or their ability to control, I think, is more a thing. I don't think it's money thing for them. I think it's a control issue.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So I think those are all very important things, because if you're not in the right state of, you know, if your physical state's not in balance, you can't, it's hard to become in a proper mental or spiritual state to
I tell people, kind of like if you're a radio, right, and your channel, your connection got a lot of static, for a human being that means their spiritual connection is not good. They can't hear the message very good from Creator. They can't, in some cases, maybe can't hear at all. So
Right. The
more you eat good food, drink good water, maybe use cannabis or whatever, and you just get out in nature and go on a hike, or you do prayer or something, the more you, each one of those things, what it does is it clears out the static so you can hear clearly and your connection is solid. And once you do that, you can gain access to just about all of the information in creation. And then, you know, and anything that's possible. And at that point in time, the problem that you have is you can't control a person like that. I was given a message one time, Holy Ghost, I was thinking about, you know, Tesla and all these free energy and all that. And I was just thinking to myself, which is kind of dangerous sometimes, I said, I feel there's something more to this than just the oil and the money. There's something more. I don't know what it is, but, well, when you have these, do these things, sometimes you get an answer, and Spirit came in pretty fast and gave me a little lesson. Said, well, Mark, what if you had something about the size of a football or a loaf of bread, something about that size, right? And it powered your house and your car and all your neighbor's houses. You know, Mark's giving a pretty big thumbs up to Spirit, right? Yeah. But I was missing the point. I said, I lost my train of thought. But Mark, the real danger is this. Wouldn't you, if you had that, wouldn't you wonder how it worked? I said, well, yeah, I'm a pretty curious person. I may not want to know all the technical details, but I'd like to have a general idea how the hell does the thing work. And Spirit said, there's the problem. The moment you see that and you start wondering, you get an answer. And the answer is you are only one step away from pulling away from this device, taking it out of the picture, and plugging yourself straight into Creator. That's how close you are. And when you do that, there is nothing that you are not capable of. Then you start doing things like you don't need food, you don't need this, you travel without a suitcase, you can do just about anything if you're what the Hopi call, you're a one-hearted person. Or you, like Jesus said, I gave you a new commandment, love one another as I've loved you. That is the key that unlocks the door to that power.
Right.
And that is the number one thing that they do not want people to learn. Because when people learn how to make that kind of connection with Creator, every possible control point over that person is gone.
That's true. Yep. Yeah, it's called manifesting. And that's what this place is about, too, is learning how to do that. And that, I believe, is why they constructed their society. People don't give you enough time. That's why they don't have free energy and all that stuff, because you're spending all your time flipping burgers, cleaning toilets, shoveling sidewalks, mowing lawns, sitting in a cubicle to do what? Keep the lights on, gas in your car, some shoes on your kids, and maybe a few dollars left over every once in a while to go out to eat so that the waitress lady can have feed her kids too. And that's it. They don't have time to sit around and figure out how to and connect like that to start manifesting into physical reality, because everything here started as a thought. And that's the realm of Creator, as far as I can tell, is out there in that space between reality and non-reality. There's that void, and that's where all this comes from. But if you have to be to work at 7, you get home at 5, you're dead tired, and you got to mow the lawn, eat dinner, have TV, watch show for a minute, rest, sleep, and get up and do it all over again. You don't have time to make that connection. And I think that's the biggest thing, what they're pushing us towards. Yeah. Technology is just a better distraction to keep people occupied in their free time. Because automation and technology, its whole selling point back in the day was it's going to free up everybody. To be able to have life luxury and automation and dishwasher and all those things give you more time. But they just filled that time with something else. They keep you distracted away from these kind of conversations and thoughts. But I think you're right. I had some similar, thoughts about certain things like that, of manifesting and how to connect in and plug into things. It's pretty amazing what happens if you can sit in a dark room, even for an hour or two. It changes you a lot.
Yeah.
But they teach people to be afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
Because darkness, I'm sorry, that is the true nature of reality, is darkness, because it requires no energy. Light requires energy. Darkness is the natural state of things. The void. And from the void flows
everything.
Well,
also, when you're in the dark, your senses are not overwhelmed by information coming in. So when you're in the dark, our five senses and stuff tend to shut down, and we start to pay attention to our other senses that we call intuition or whatever connection with Creator. And so we start to pay attention more to some of our other spiritual sensory apparatus than we do just our eyes and ears and stuff. So when we shut down some of our sensory things, we can make other connections. That's what part of what meditation is all about, is to try to shut down some of the other stuff where we get a barrage of information, visual, hearing and stuff, and we get overwhelmed and we can't process it that well and get the picture straight. So if we clear all that away for a little bit, then we can think better. And probably that is also a level where something like cannabis or something can come in and maybe help do something like that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, that's what they say about, they do the ayahuasca ceremony, a few things like that. Is that that whole getting in that state of mind, that state of being, I guess, is a better way to put it. And, ayahuasca is a little bit different than some of those other things, but, you're right, of being able to disconnect from the immediate reality of three dimensions by all those sensory inputs, like you're saying, and being able to connect up to, source or creator, whatever you're talking about. And so that's another reason, too, I think, why a lot of these groups and Native American church, things like that, are under attack, because that's what they teach. Mr. Mooney's, one of his primary teachings is that, an understanding of you and having respect for your parents.
Yeah.
He said that was one of the biggest things when they were working with people in the prisons and things like that, that's one of the primary things. And once you get those things aligned properly, you can go in all these other areas and heal a lot of internal healing yourself just by being properly aligned there. And part of that whole process, even in the sweat lodges, and not so much, I don't think it's the sweat lodges so much, but it's being closed off from the external environment that everybody's accustomed to, being in that enclosed space, darkness. So I was going to ask you a question, though, because Will was talking about the other fellow, Mike Mills, was it? About the pyramids, 8 pyramids, and you talked about the Hopi of 5. Is there anything beyond that, or that's it? Story's over?
Well, if you look at a pyramid is built out of certain materials, and it's a certain geometric structure built with certain geometry, and one aspect of it is that, I forget who it was first that did this, but they measured the energy, frequency energy, coming out of the top of one of the pyramids. This is probably true of all of them. And it turned out that it was in the frequency of green light. And this was it's a component of what they call torsion energy, which the Russians first started publicizing on. And it's probably a pretty important level of creation. And there would be a balance between left spinning torsion and right spinning torsion. And the green color apparently is what's at the top of the pyramid. So, and the shape of the pyramid itself is essentially a good torsion type of design. So I would not be surprised if some of the people back then were aware of how to create a torsion machine, pyramid, integrate it into the ley lines of the Earth, into the magnetic field of the Earth, and essentially, because the magnetic field and the torsion field of the Earth are almost one in the same. So I would suspect that the people back then may have actually known all this, and the whole grid system on the Earth, because we know many of the sacred sites and sacred temples are built on the grid system, on the ley line system. So I suspect someone back then understood all of this and was trying to create a grid work to actually do what Mills is talking about, to stabilize and balance the planet. That may have been what they were trying to do.
Now, that's very interesting. The number 5, too, if you ever looked at a playing dice, how it's got dots in each corner and one in the center, that's exactly like looking down at the top of the pyramid.
Yes.
That's also part of the whole hexagon shape that's been proven to be one of the honeycomb shape, one of the proven strongest shape forms that there are. So
yes.
5, I think, is a good number. That's a lot
well,
of...
Well, 5
I guess,
and that shape that you're talking about with 4 dots in the corners and the center dot, that is also said in the Mayan tradition to be one of the symbols of Quetzalcoatl, is that particular symbol. Relates to green, and that's in the Mayan medicine wheel, the center of the medicine wheel, which would be the capstone of the pyramid, in the Mayan medicine wheel is green. And then if you go look in their Popol Vuh book, when they're moving from one world cycle to the next, and they're in the darkness, moving and waiting for the coming of the new sun, they have prayers in there. And the interesting thing about those prayers is they do not mention white, red, black, or blue, or yellow. They don't mention the 4 directions. The only color they mention is green, the center, which would be the unity point, or the capstone of the pyramid, or where that green torsion energy is coming up out of that pyramid. That's the only thing they talk about is the green path to stay
that's
on the
really,
green path.
Wow, that's kind of weird. You know, when I sort of came out of my little retreat, showed up here at my office, and there was a playing guys sitting on my front step, I guess it was from Yahtzee or something maybe, but it's a dice that has 5s on all sides of it. I've been carrying it in my pocket for like the last 2 weeks. I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. I wonder what that means. Quetzalcoatl now,
I don't really know that much about that whole their history or who that person is, but what does that represent?
Well, yeah, there were many of them, actually. Some people took on that name. Some, not all of them were good. The original one, I suspect, they say a long time ago, and the story is all over the whole planet, so it's not just there, that someone showed up and taught them almost everything, agricultural, calendars, medicine. It's almost like this guy comes in and teaches them their entire civilization. Now, this story is in other cultures on Earth, too. So I don't know exactly what was going on, but, you know, it appears that the person, you could interpret it in a lot of different ways. Some of the stories, the Quetzal and the Quetzal would be the wind, the Quetzal bird flying in the air, and the Quetzal would be the water serpent. And in so many of the stories, they would call this person the Lord of the Wind and the Water because he could, you know, do things like stop hurricanes and stuff and all kinds of stuff, heal people, even dead people, sick people, and taught them basically their entire civilization in some cases, everything, the building of temples, the agriculture, how to grow seeds, and these people were growing huge plants. I mean, we're talking ears of corn that are, you know, you have to have two arms to carry it. Stories are like that. And so this person apparently had a vast amount of knowledge. And, and the thing is, the one thing he also taught was how everybody is connected, how everybody is one. That was another big part of the message. That we are all united. We are all one within Creator. That was another part of the message. And the, you know, the prophecy and some of the prophecy they have with the eagle and condor, they also talk about the Quetzal. So one of the prophecies, if you hear it, they'll say when the eagle and the condor unite in the sky. So the south and the north, or the mental and the heart, or the non-tribal and the tribal, on different levels, when these two things come together, and they say that it will be like the fingers of a hand. So what's our fingers of a hand? We have different fingers, right? They don't look the same. They're kind of the same, but they're different.
Right.
So that's like different people. But they all realize they're on one hand. There's one hand here.
You know?
And in the story, though, in the prophecy, it says the eagle and the condor will come together, but it also says the Quetzal will come in there and will be in the center position to help balance it. And that will probably be the teachings and the concepts of Quetzalcoatl in terms of the balance of things.
Right.
And,
yeah. Yeah. Well, that was what that, I guess that was the, that gathering this spring down in Sedona was that eagle, condor, Quetzal.
Yes.
Was kind of what the theme of that was, the name, and bringing together those things. But that's kind of been interesting. So you say that, I guess, story was across different cultures from different parts of the world. Do you know any other other ones that kind of mimic that or along the same lines, but maybe a different name of a individual or person?
Well, I think if you look around the world, you'll see in different ones, you know, they basically all talk about and have words for saying we unify. You know, we've given examples. The Maya in Lakesh means I am another you. We're connected. Omatakiyasin, all are related. Namaste. There's different cultures that will have specific words that more or less point to this aspect that we all are connected. And we share... on another level, we share a consciousness literally with Creator. And if we are aware of that and we really believe it, what are we going to do to each other? How are we going to treat each other? You literally do treat another person just like yourself, the golden rule.
Right.
So we have this stuff is around in our traditional teachings all over the planet in different ways. and it's right in front of us. It's so simple that we're not paying attention to it, but the other guys are, because what are they doing? They're trying to undermine that to where we're not doing that, where we fight with each other. We don't believe we're connected. This one's better than this one, blah, 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 and get us all, you know, pretty soon it's just a big war where all of us are fighting everybody else.
Right, yeah.
That's all it is. And that's insanity. So,
That's true. But yeah, it is. It's, you're right. It goes back to that whole concept of me, myself, I am, my life, my body, which I guess is true to a certain extent, but the fact of not understanding that even though you and I are sitting in the same room, it looks like there's two people, but the energy that's there that we're both operating on or flowing from is the same. It has to be made out of the same stuff, I guess. That's really what it breaks down to. But kind of hard sometimes for people to visualize that or understand it, especially with the, like I said, the conditioning that goes on.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
we're
so talking
the opposite.
Yeah,
and it's easy to believe because we say, "Well, I'm different. I'm not that person."
No, I'm different.
And in some ways, we're
things.
Not.
Yeah. Right.
But if we think about it and we step back from the picture and we say that everything, absolutely everything, comes out of the consciousness and the mind, thoughts, heart, whatever, all those things, whatever words we want to use, they all come out of Creator.
Right.
It is, there is no other way. And that means in Creator's consciousness and awareness, we all are in it. We are united in that. And if we really thought about that and believed it, then we have access to all that aspect of consciousness and the Creator. We have psychic abilities. We have all those things, and especially if we're operating from our heart and we trust and we believe this and we treat each other like we are the same people, then what can we do? What would our civilization be like?
Yeah, true. I know. Maybe we should all be a little bit more like Gene Roddenberry in Star Trek. The Hive.
Yeah.
Remember that, those episodes with the Hive Mind? And it was a big collective group, you know.
Well, I don't think we all want to be completely hive mind.
No.
I think we're trying to strike a balance between individuality and connective. We're trying to form a balance between those two things where we're not just a hive mind. We are independent, but we're independent working in the balance with everybody else. And we're trying to struggle to learn how to do that. I think that's what's happening.
Guys, we got to run.
Okay.
Yeah,
wow,
sorry.
Great
chat.
Appreciate the opportunity to get on there and chat with you, Mark and Will, and everybody else. So I'll get a hold of you later in the week, Mark. I mean, Will. And
sounds good.
Do those issues too. Get back on track and help you guys at the station and everything. So
hey, we gotta get you on more often.
Cool. Yeah. Have a good time. So yeah, I'd like that. And as I said, I'll get with you a bit later in the week. And I know I need to get a hold of Mac and also Wynn. Kind of dropped the ball on a few projects, but kind of fell off the out of the slow
sometimes
thing for a while. A few people, but that's all good.
Sometimes you got to step back if you can. Well, it's a hard thing to do.
So,
well, thanks.
Yeah. So, Mark, this show that you're doing it later today?
Yeah, probably in about 30 minutes.
How would I come into that?
His show is called Feet to Fire. So if you look up Feet to Fire radio show, you should be able to find it.
I think it's F2F.
Yes.
F2F.
You can do a search on Feet to Fire and radio show or something.
Is it on Blog Talk Radio?
No, I don't forget how he's running it.
Alright, well, I'll do that. I got a few minutes to listen on a few things. But yeah, I'll be interested to hear what you have to say.
Here it is, guys. Here it is, feettothefireradio.com.
Feet to the Fire
Radio. FEETTO T THEFIRERADIO.
Yeah.
And
they're going to be holding my feet to the fire and roasting me.
Hey, listen, we're going to get cut off. Got to run.
Okay, right. Thanks, Javier. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, great grandson of old.